Coming up next on Passion Struck, do you have a voice that constantly speaks to you throughout the day? Do you hear the thoughts in your mind without having to vocalize them? For most people, including myself, the answer is a resounding yes. This inner voice is a constant companion, aiding in decision-making, problem-solving, as well as self-reflection. However, this inner voice can also be a sound of self-doubt, regret, fear, questioning our worthiness, and reminding us of embarrassing moments. It's a presence most of us can't imagine living a life without. But what if I told you that there are people who do not experience this inner voice at all? Surprised? So was I when I discovered this phenomenon. Join us today as I explore what life looks like without an inner monologue and uncover the unique ways that these individuals navigate the world. Welcome to Passion Struck. Hi, I'm your host, John R. Miles, and on the show, we decipher the secrets, tips, and guidance of the world's most inspiring people and turn their wisdom into practical advice for you and those around you. Our mission is to help you unlock the power of intentionality so that you can become the best version of yourself. If you're new to the show, I offer advice and answer listener questions on Fridays. We have long-form interviews the rest of the week with guests ranging from astronauts to authors, CEOs, creators, innovators, scientists, military leaders, visionaries, and athletes. Now, let's go out there and become Passion Struck. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to episode 468 of Passion Struck, consistently ranked in the top five most inspirational podcasts in the world. A heartfelt thank you to each and every one of you who return to the show every week, eager to listen, learn, and discover new ways to live better, to be better, and most importantly, to make a meaningful impact in the world. If you're new to the show, thank you so much for being here, or you simply want to introduce this to a friend or a family member, and we so appreciate it when you do that. We have episode starter packs, which are collections of our fans' favorite episodes that we organize in a convenient playlist to give any new listener a great way to get acclimated to everything we do here on the show. Either go to Spotify or passionstruck.com/starterpacks to get started. I am thrilled to share an incredible milestone that we accomplished together. We have now surpassed over 40 million downloads on the Passion Struck podcast. And this isn't just a number. It's a testament to the movement that we're building, the conversations that we're sparking, and the change that we're inspiring across the globe. I'm also so excited to announce that my book, Passion Struck, won the gold medal at the Nonfiction Book Awards and also is a winner at the Eric Hoffer Book Awards. You can purchase it on Amazon or go to passionstruck.com for more options. In case you missed my interviews from earlier in the week, I had two phenomenal ones with Ryan Holiday and Noam Platt. Ryan, who's known for his thought-provoking works on stoicism and personal growth, joins me to discuss his brand new book, Right Thing, Right Now. In this not-to-be-missed conversation, we'll explore the virtues that make a fulfilled life, how stoicism can help us address the challenges that we face in modern society, and why doing the right thing matters more than ever in the world today. Noam Platt, the founder of Make Good, explores the transformative world of assistive technology. Discover how Noam and his team are revolutionizing the lives of people with disabilities through custom design equipment and a commitment to accessibility. And if you liked either of those episodes or today's, we would so appreciate you giving it a 5-star review and a rating. Those reviews and ratings go such a long way into bringing more people into the Passion Struck community, where we can give them more weekly doses of hope, inspiration, and meaning. And I know we and our guests love to hear your feedback. Now, let's talk about today's episode. I am going to explore a topic that challenges our understanding of consciousness and self-awareness, anendophagia, or life without an inner monologue. Imagine navigating your daily life without the constant chatter of thoughts in your head, the silent conversations with yourself, or the mental rehearsals of future events. For some, this is a reality. In the past, it was commonly assumed that inner speech was a universal human experience. However, recent scientific findings have revealed that about 5 to 10% of people lack this running internal monologue. This discovery opens up new questions about how we perceive and interact in the world around us. In this episode, I'll uncover what it means to live without an inner monologue, how it affects perception, decision-making, and self-reflection, and what it reveals about the diversity of human cognition. We'll also examine the science behind inner speech, the variations in how people experience their inner lives, and the implications of our understanding on consciousness. Join me as we embark on this journey into the silent minds of those who experience life differently, shedding light on a lesser known aspect of the human experience and broadening our appreciation of the complexity and the variety in which we think and perceive the world around us. Whether you're curious about the mechanics of thought or interested in the profound questions of identity and self-awareness, this exploration on Anendaphasia promises to be a thought-provoking adventure. Thank you for choosing Passion Struck and choosing me to be your host and guide on your journey to creating an intentional life. Now, let that journey begin. To begin our exploration of life without an inner monologue, it's essential to understand what anendaphasia is and how it differs from the more commonly experienced phenomenon of inner speech. Anendaphasia refers to the absence of an inner verbal dialogue, those silent conversations that we have with ourselves throughout the day. For many, inner speech is a constant companion, helping with planning, problem solving, and self-reflection. However, with individuals with anendaphasia, these internal verbal processes are largely absent. To appreciate the experience of anendaphasia, let's delve into the science of inner speech. Cognitive scientists have studied how we use inner speech for various functions, such as self-regulation, where inner speech helps us control our behavior by rehearsing actions and outcomes. It also helps with problem solving by enabling us to work through complex problems and to develop solutions internally. It also helps with self-reflection, where it allows us to reflect on past experiences as well as future plans. And lastly, it helps with emotional regulation. Talking to ourselves internally can help manage emotions and stress. Research has shown that there's a significant variation in how individuals experience their inner lives. While some people have a constant inner monologue, others have a more sporadic inner speech. And a small percentage, those with anendaphasia, experience almost none. This variation can be influenced by several factors, including neurological differences, developmental history, and cognitive preferences. Now that we've established what anendaphasia is and the role of inner speech, we can now explore how living without an inner monologue impacts our daily life. We'll look at perception and awareness. How do people with anendaphasia perceive the world around them? We'll look at decision making. What strategies do they use to make decisions without verbal internal dialogue? Self-reflection. How do they engage in self-reflection and introspection? And lastly, communication. What are the implications for communication and social interaction? To bring the concept of anendaphasia to life, I'll share personal accounts and case studies of individuals who experience life without an inner monologue. These stories provide valuable insights into their unique experiences and challenges, offering a human perspective on this fascinating condition. Marcel Williams, a creator of guided meditation recordings, has a distinctive approach to reading and thinking. He says, "Reading without hearing a voice in my head is something that I've always done, and it felt completely natural until I realized that others hear words they read. For me, reading is a silent activity. My comprehension comes from visualizing the concepts." Marcel views his lack of inner speech as both beneficial and challenging. He says, "On one hand, I don't get bogged down by overthinking or negative self-talk. On the other hand, I sometimes struggle with articulating my thoughts quickly in conversations because I'm forming ideas visually instead of verbally." His experience highlights the diverse ways in which anendaphasia can shape cognitive processes and communication styles. Then we have Elena, who prefers to remain anonymous, who describes her unique experiences of thinking in images and feelings rather than in words. She recalls, "When I first learned that most people have a constant internal dialogue, I felt like an outsider. My thoughts manifest as a series of images or sensory experiences. If I think about a beach, I feel the warmth of the sun and hear the waves, but I don't say the word beach in my head." Alina acknowledges that while her thought process reduces the chances of self-critical thoughts, it sometimes makes communicating her feelings and ideas to others challenging. "Expressing complex emotions or thoughts can be tough. I might feel something deeply, but struggle to find the right words to convey it because my primary experience of the thought is nonverbal." Alina's story underscores the unique ways with which individuals with an end aphasia navigate their internal and external worlds. These personal accounts of Marcel and Elena provide a glimpse into what it must feel like to live with an end aphasia. Their experience illustrates the diverse ways in which the lack of an inner monologue can influence cognition, comprehension, as well as communication. While the absence of inner speech can offer advantages, such as reduced overthink and negative self-talk, it also presents challenges in verbal articulation and in emotional expression. By sharing these stories of Marcel and Elena, I hope to deepen our overall understanding of an anaphasia and help others to appreciate the diversity of human thought. Through the perspectives of those who experience life differently, we gain insights into the vast expressions of cognitive experiences and the various ways that our minds navigate the world. So now let's go into the science behind an anaphasia. Historically, it was presumed that everyone possesses an inner voice that communicates using words. However, psychologist Russell Hurlburt from the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, challenged this notion in the late 1990s. His pioneering research revealed that while some people experience inner thoughts as if a radio is playing in their heads, others do not have inner speech at all. Hurlburt's findings opened the door to a broader understanding of cognitive diversity, suggesting that inner monologue is not a universal human experience. The topic gained significant attention through a tweet by Kyle Plant Emoji and a subsequent blog post by Ryan Langdon, which informed the internet that an inner monologue is not universal. These revelations sparked widespread interest and conversation, highlighting the varied ways that people process thoughts. While most people use inner speech as a primary mode of thought, those with an anaphasia demonstrate that effective thinking and reasoning can occur through other cognitive modalities. For instance, Marcel Williams and Elena, whose stories I shared earlier, illustrate how visualizing concepts and experiencing thoughts as sensory images can serve as powerful alternatives to verbal internal speech. This phenomenon has significant implications for our understanding of the human mind and for cognitive diversity. It challenges the traditional view and underscores the significance of valuing and recognizing different cognitive styles. By studying and appreciating these variations, we can gain deeper insights into the complexity of human thought and enhance our approaches to education, communication, and mental health. So now let's dive into the neuroscience of inner speech. Following our exploration of personal accounts and the historical context of internal speech, the next logical step is to delve into the neuroscience behind inner speech and an end aphasia. Understanding the brain mechanisms involved can shed light on why some people experience an inner monologue and why others do not. Inner speech, known as verbal thought, is believed to involve several brain regions. Located in the frontal lobe, Broca's area is traditionally associated with speech production. It's thought to play a crucial role in forming and articulating internal dialogue. Found in the temporal lobe, Wernicke's area is involved with language comprehension. This region helps us understand and make sense of internal dialogue. Then there's the default mode network. This network is active when the mind is at rest and not focused on the outside world. It is involved in self-referential thinking and the generation of spontaneous thoughts, including inner speech. Understanding the neural basis of inner speech and an end aphasia helps us appreciate how different cognitive styles emerge. Research using neuroimaging techniques such as fMRI and positron emission tomography has shown differences in brain activity between individuals who frequently engage in inner speech and those who do not. For example, people with an end aphasia may show less activity in Broca and Wernicke's areas during tasks that typically involve inner speech. Instead, they might exhibit heightened activity in brain regions associated with visual and sensory processing, reflecting their tendency to think in images or feelings. A 2023 study published in the Cognitive Science Society Journal further elucidates these differences. Individuals who reported experiencing either a high degree or very little inner voice participated in experiments to determine the differences in their ability to remember language input and find rhyme words. In experiment one, participants were asked to remember and to recall words that were very similar in sounding and spelling, such as bought, caught, taught, and wart. The results supported the hypothesis. Participants without an inner voice had significantly more issues remembering words. In experiment two, participants were required to determine whether pairs of pictures contained words that rhymed, like a sock and a clock. Success on this task relied on the ability to internally repeat the words to compare their sounds. Again, those without an inner voice performed worse in this task. Hearing from individuals without an inner monologue offers valuable perspectives on this unique cognitive experience. For example, instead of having a verbal conversation in their mind, they might see concepts as images or rely on physical sensations and emotions to understand and process information. Let's take Sarah's experience. She says, "I never really realized that people had a constant stream of verbal thoughts until someone mentioned it. For me, thoughts come as images or feelings. When I think about what to do next, I see a mental picture of the task rather than talking myself through it." And then there's Alex's approach. He says, "Without an inner monologue, I rely heavily on visual aids and physical reminders. I use lists and drawings to organize my thoughts and to plan my day. It might seem different, but it works well for me." These personal stories highlight the adaptability and resilience of these individuals with anaphasia. Despite thinking differently, they develop effective strategies to navigate their world and achieve their goals. So now that we've gone through the science and practical applications, as well as some examples of anaphasia, it's now important to go through some lessons learned from life living without an inner monologue. The first lesson that we can learn is to embrace cognitive diversity. Recognizing that people think differently can foster empathy and inclusivity. Understanding that not everyone experiences an inner monologue challenges us to appreciate the diversity of human cognition and adapt our communication and interaction styles accordingly. It also provides us alternative thinking strategies. Learning about life without an inner monologue can inspire new ways of thinking and problem solving. For example, incorporating visual aids, sensory experiences, and external tools like writing and drawing can enhance cognitive processes and improve productivity. Then there's leveraging external tools. Individuals with anaphasia often use external tools to organize their thoughts and articulate ideas. Practices such as journaling, mind mapping, and physical activity can benefit everyone by providing alternative methods for clarifying thoughts and setting goals. It also enables us to establish new perspectives of mindfulness and mental health. Understanding that inner monologue is not the only way to experience self-awareness can encourage the exploration of diverse mindfulness and mental health practices. Techniques such as meditation, sensory immersion, and mindful movement offer alternative paths to mental clarity and emotional balance. So let's now explore some educational strategies of life without an inner monologue. Given the diversity in cognitive styles, it's essential to adapt educational models to accommodate both those with an inner monologue and those without inner monologues. Here are some practical strategies. The first is to incorporate diagrams, charts, and visual presentations to support students who think in images. Next, there's multisensory approaches. Use a combination of auditory, visual, and kinesthetic teaching methods to engage all listeners. Third, flexible assignments. Provide various assessment formats, such as oral presentations, written exams, and creative projects to cater to different cognitive strengths. Next, let's look at some workplace adaptations. Creating an inclusive workplace that recognizes different thinking styles can enhance productivity and innovation. Consider these approaches. First is diverse communication methods. Use written, visual, and verbal communication to ensure that information is accessible to everyone. Utilize inclusive meeting practices. Allow for visual brainstorming sessions and provide materials in advance to give all participants time to process their information and do so in their preferred way. Third, customize workplaces. Design workplaces to cater to different needs, such as quiet areas for those who need a distraction-free environment and collaborative spaces for team discussions. Then there are mental health interventions. Understanding the role of inner monologues in mental health can lead to effective support strategies for individuals experiencing anaphasia. First, there are therapeutic approaches that do not rely solely on verbal introspection, but include visual and sensory-based methods. There's also mindfulness and meditation that focus on sensory awareness rather than internal dialogue. And lastly, support groups that recognize and address the unique challenges faced by individuals with different cognitive styles. Living without an inner monologue is a unique cognitive experience that challenges conventional understandings of human thought. By exploring this phenomenon, we gain invaluable insights into the varied ways that people think, perceive, and interact with the world. This exploration deepens our appreciation for the diversity of human cognition and teaches us valuable lessons about empathy, adaptability, and personal growth. Understanding anendophagia can inspire new ways of thinking and encourage the exploration of diverse cognitive strategies. Embracing cognitive diversity not only enriches our understanding of the human mind, but also enhances our ability to support and connect with one another. In a world that often values verbal reasoning and internal dialogue, recognizing and supporting alternative cognitive processes is essential. Educational systems, workplaces, and social environments can all benefit from greater inclusivity and adaptability, ensuring that individuals with anandophagia can thrive. As research into anandophagia continues, we can look forward to uncovering more about this unique cognitive landscape. By listening to the voices of those with silent minds, we can foster a more empathetic and supportive society where every individual's way of thinking is valued and respected. I hope you all enjoyed the show, and I wanted to thank everyone who listened and wrote in this week. Videos are on YouTube at both our main channel at John R. Miles, and our Clips channel at Passion Struck Clips. Please go check it out and join over 250,000 other subscribers. Advertiser deals and discount codes are in one convenient place at passionstruck.com/deals. Please consider supporting those who support the show. And if you're looking for daily doses of inspiration, then find me on all the social platforms at John R. Miles. And if you're interested in joining our Courage Movement, then sign up for our weekly newsletter, Live Intentionally, where we offer a weekly challenge to help you build your courage muscles and foster intentional living. Are you ready to find out where you stand on the path to becoming passion struck? Then dive into our engaging Passion Struck quiz. Crafted to reflect the core principles of my latest book, Passion Struck, the quiz consists of 20 questions and only takes about 10 minutes to complete. Don't miss this chance to gain valuable insights into your passion struck journey. Go to passionstruck.com today and take the quiz. You're about to hear a preview of the Passion Struck podcast interview that I did with Morley Robbins, an expert in mineral metabolism. In this episode, we explore Morley's incredible journey into the world of minerals, his groundbreaking insights into the root causes of chronic health issues and the transformative power of understanding our body's mineral needs. From debunking common health myths to practical tips for optimizing your well-being, Morley's wisdom is sure to inspire and to inform.
In the 1930s, it was very common to get between 4 and 6 milligrams of copper in a daily diet. That's a lot of copper. By the 1960s, that number had dropped to 2 to 5 milligrams of copper. And by the current day, the RDA for today is 0.9 milligrams. But most people don't even get that. 60% of people don't even get 0.9 milligrams of copper. And so we just have to be mindful that there's been this generational decline in the availability of copper, in large part changes in the farming system, changes in the food system, changes in the pharmaceutical system have altered our access to this mineral. NIH has what's called an upper tolerable limit for copper at 12 milligrams, and yet we're supposed to believe the narrative, I'm anemic and I'm copper toxic, when in fact the truth is just the opposite.
Remember that we rise by lifting others, so share this show with those that you love and care about. And if you found this episode interesting on anendophagia, then definitely share it with your friends and family. In the meantime, do your best to apply what you hear on the show so that you can live what you listen. Until next time, go out there and become passion struck.